The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome in to Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, joined by my co-host today, Nathan Gladwell. Nathan Gray cannot be with us today. We found this out earlier. His AC has gone out in the worst possible week of the year. And I know it's 97, 98, basically the entirety of this week. It's a rough time to be Gray Oldenburg. But before we get into all the sports today, Nathan, I want to ask you, would you rather have no AC in the summer when it feels like it's 100 degrees like now, or have no heat in the winter?
No heat. I don't think there's anything compared to the amount of hell it is to have no AC in the summer. Just to give you all a little information, I had no AC last summer. It was miserable. I cannot say upstairs anymore. It's not something that I ever want to deal with again. So if I know Gray right now, he's trying to hide in the refrigerator or something along that because this is probably one of the worst weeks to be without AC. So I feel bad for him. But yeah, absolutely. I can go with no heat, especially just the way my body is, a lot hotter than colder.
I would take the no heat in the winter as well, because you can always bundle up and keep warm that
There's
way.
Blankets, where this,
yeah.
What you gonna do?
Summer, you can't just walk around a birthday suit in your house. That's just not proper in the nicest sense. But we talked about that, the AC and Gray not being here. Let's talk about the sports, Nathan. The first one being Happy Gilmore 2 released this past weekend. We both seen it. I saw it before you. I told you had to watch it. You made the bold claim, Nathan. What do you want to make the bold claim of that you texted me earlier this weekend?
That Happy Gilmore 2 was better than the first one. And I know it's going to shock a lot of people, but I would suppose we're going to have some spoilers. We're going to talk about some spoilers. So if you haven't watched the movie yet, I would suggest you go and watch it before you listen to us talk about it. However, the amount of cameos, I think, is what makes the movie better. You can kind of pick and choose who you like. John Daly, I think, probably the funniest person in that
John.
Movie. Uncle John. Got to feed Uncle John 3 times a day. he was funny. Bad Bunny playing Oscar was just great. And, of course, I liked seeing JT in there. Even though it was a short cameo for him, he made the best of it. And just a lot of good callbacks. So I feel like the movie tied in. The movie understand what it was supposed to do. It was supposed to be a funny, raunchy comedy movie instead of having this whole plot that you go through. Of course, there was a plot. Was the plot that great? No, not in the greatest sense. Matt Seagal, really stupid. But it set it up for some funny moments, and that is what makes the movie better.
I thought Scotty Scheffler stole the show throughout the entire movie. You start with the stuff he did at the end where he punches the guy and then he goes to jail. He says, "Not again." And then he's in jail. He's been in there for, what was it, like 3 days, Nathan? And the police officer asks him if he wants to make a phone call. And he asks what's for dinner. And the officer tells him chicken fingers. And he says, "I'll stay another night." I thought he did a great job. Will Zalatoris, who played Blondie in a sense where he really isn't the actor that played Blondie in the original one. But he, on the tour, people call him Blondie because he looks so much like the kid that played him. I thought that was a great callback. And it's some of the things you in that movie, you have to either kind of be ingrained in the golf world or have a just maybe even just a minor sense of what's going on in that community, to pick up on the Scottie Scheffler jokes, the Will Zalatoris jokes, those type of things. You have to be kind of ingrained in the golf world to understand. But that the movie as a whole, it's not going to win an Emmy Award for the best picture or anything like that. That's not the point of the movie, like you said, Nathan. The point of the movie was to call back certain things, various actors from the past, and be funny. And I thought it achieved all those things. What was your favorite part of the movie, Nathan?
Gosh, favorite part. That's a hard one to ask. I'll call back to when Happy first goes back and he plays at the municipal golf course and just absolutely craps his pants. I mean, he's drinking out of his random objects, whatever he can find to get some liquor in them. And then after he hits his first good shot, him driving the golf cart onto the other one, I think that one was pretty funny. But of course, it's a hard one to choose. I mean, there were so many different funny moments in that movie. I can't even think. I'm gonna have to go back and rewatch it for a third time to figure out which one was my favorite. But they're all good.
My favorite moment was when the female maxi golf player grabs Rory McIlroy's nipples, twists them, and then Bryson DeChambeau comes in and says, "Don't touch my boy's titties. These are my titties."
Yes, that's also a good one.
That whole
intro stuff was fantastic with the Magic Golf League. And the fact that we didn't even realize that 8-Ball was played by Reggie Bush. I was like, hold on, wait, let me go back and rewatch this. And sure enough, it was. So it's just small stuff like that. People that you don't even recognize, you pick up in the second showing of the movie if you go back and watch it.
Yeah. Well, there was one person that didn't like the movie. You're a big fan of him on Twitter, Nathan, his sports show.
Oh, Josh Pate. I'm aware. He received a lot of feedback for that one.
Did not like it. Is your take or anything on Josh Pate taken aback from what he said about Happy Gilmore 2? Or you still feel the same way about him?
No, Josh Pate's a very knowledgeable person, especially when it comes to the sport of college football. And I will respect him for that, but maybe he should stay in his lane a little bit and not talk about – talking about movies. And you know, it's not just him. A lot of people go and watch this movie and they wanted it to be something completely different rather than what it was trying to be. And, you know, that's not fair to it. I think you try to put it in its own little box and you have its own expectation, and that's just not what it was. So I think it accomplished what it was trying to do and be that funny, raunchy movie that we haven't had in some time. And there are going to be people out there that don't like it just because that is what it is, and that's not their taste. And it's a shame because I think they're really missing out on a lot.
They're missing out on a lot. I still think that the first Happy Gilmore is better than this new one, just based on the singular person that did not appear in this movie being the – I don't know if I can repeat it on air, but he screams Happy Gilmore throughout the movie to kind of throw up his swing. I'll say that. You know who I'm talking about. The word he yells starts with a J. You can gather your clues there and make an assumption, but him not being in the movie was a big letdown, but it is what it is. That's one of the main reasons I thought Happy Gilmore 1 is better than the first or the second, and it's hard to beat the original nowadays. Unless you're Top Gun Maverick, which was really, really good.
That also was a great movie.
Let's move on from the movie review, Nathan, and talk about some head coaches around the country and their interesting comments, to say the least, about the SEC, starting with the biggest bozo of them all, being Indiana head coach Kurt Cignetti. Here's the quote he made at Big Ten Media Days a couple weeks ago. Here's the bottom line. We picked up an extra home game, and we play 9 conference games. The 2 best conferences in college football, any football guy that's objective will tell you, are the Big Ten and the SEC. 12 of the 16 SEC teams play 3 Group of 5 or an FCS team. 12 of those plays 36 games, 29 group of 5 games, and 7 FCS games, and 1 less conference game than the Big Ten. So we figured we would just adopt SEC scheduling philosophy. Some people don't like it. I'm more focused in on those 9 conference games. And that was all in response to Indiana dropping their home and away schedule matchup with Virginia, and they'd already done that with UConn and Louisville as well. What do you think about Cignetti and his shots for the SEC, Nathan, and the scheduling he says they don't make?
You know, some people make 1 playoff appearance and think they're the shit. Well, I got news for Kirk Cignetti and Indiana. You got a lot more to prove, and the fact that you feel that you've had the freedom to talk about the SEC like you have is pretty disgusting. You go and look at the SEC scheduling, because I think people do home in on the cupcake games at the end of the season. And yes, I'm not going to ignore this. There are those type of games, and yes, at some point, I would like to get rid of them. But they serve a great purpose. The SEC schedule is great out of conference opponents. I think literally every single member of the SEC plays a power four team within the first 3 weeks of the season. So that's the out of conference. So we're talking about it's still a very strong strength of schedule, but on top of that, you're playing in the SEC. The SEC is by far the hardest conference. Week in, week out, it is deeper than the Big Ten is. I think that's a thing we can both agree on. And it's an every given Saturday type of thing. Not saying that those bottom Big Ten teams can't upset the top ones, but it rarely ever happens. I mean, the only you would have to have some great showings. I mean, it feels like every single time I'm going and watching a Big Ten game, I see Purdue getting steamrolled by Ohio State or Penn State or someone, because it's almost like those are cupcake games. Those teams aren't good enough. But I can go and watch in Alabama or Georgia, go and play a Kentucky or a Vanderbilt or Oklahoma, and that's a close game. It's a competitive game, and it's not because those teams are bad. It's not because Alabama and Georgia are worse off. It's just a more competitive conference. There are more opportunities for upsets because those teams are better talented, and I think that has been proven for decades now. It's a consistent thing. But I hate the comments about the scheduling because it is such a joke. I mean, for one, you look at Alabama's upcoming non-conference schedule throughout the years. I mean, they're going to go and play Ohio State and multiple other big teams that they have had scheduled for a while. I mean, even this year, they're playing Florida State and Wisconsin, which were two teams that were scheduled years in advance because they were the best teams in their conference. And of course, now it's a situation where they're not as good, and it doesn't look as good, and people are like, "Wow, they're playing Florida State, beating up on poor Florida State, who only won two games last year." It's like that's out of our control. But I think it's a very stupid comment to make, especially when you look at Week One and what all the SEC is doing. I mean, LSU playing at Clemson, Texas is going to Ohio State, and those aren't even the only ones. There are other big games out there too. So it's a very stupid comment to make. And then going back to the whole cupcake last 2 weeks of the season, you know, it's more of a reprieve from playing a tough SEC schedule. I think that it is rewarding not only for the team that is playing the SEC opponent, but the opponent who is getting paid very well to be able to come, and it is improving their program. And I think that is a beneficial agreement between both schools. So I don't want to get rid of that, although I would like to see us play another conference game. I think it serves a massive purpose in the college football world at this point.
You look at Indiana's schedule last year, played one regular season ranked team, and they played Notre Dame in the playoff. The one ranked team they played in regular season thumped him. It was Ohio State, 38-15. And Indiana's leading passer had a whopping 68 yards.
And we said that was a college football playoff team right there.
Yes. And you look at their schedule this year, their first three games, Old Dominion, Kennesaw State, Indiana State. Then you get into the Big Ten schedule, Illinois, Iowa, Oregon, Michigan State, UCLA, Maryland, Penn State, Wisconsin, and Purdue. That's real tough there. Illinois is going to be tough. Iowa's defense is always going to be tough. Oregon, that's a whole different beast. But Michigan State, UCLA, Maryland, we don't know what those teams are going to look like. Purdue, they were the worst team in the Big Ten last year. Wisconsin, that's a big question mark there. And at Penn State, that's always going to be a tough one. Your schedule is fairly easy compared to the other SEC teams. And even last year, one ranked team, and the one ranked team you played, you lost to poorly. And we decided, you know what? They're 11-1. We're going to put them in the playoff over these 9-3 SEC teams like Ole Miss, like Alabama, like South Carolina. And I'm not sitting here because I'm an angry Alabama fan that they didn't get to play in the college football playoff. If they wanted to play, they should have handled business against Oklahoma. They should have handled business against Vanderbilt. And they didn't. But if we're going to sit here and tell me that Indiana, with their schedule, their strength of schedule, the opponents they played, is better than any of those three SEC teams I've mentioned, you're insane. It was proven last year in the playoff when they played Notre Dame, they didn't need to be there. And for Kurt Cignetti to go up on the podium and make these comments and allude to that the SEC plays a easier schedule and they schedule all these group of five and FCS teams. Like you said, Nathan, they schedule them towards the end of the year and really following a tough big matchup at the beginning of the year, like after Florida State. You want to schedule an easy game so you kind of rebound, have a way to build that up, or before a big game like Alabama does this year where you play – or sorry, it's after, where they play UL Monroe where it's easier for them. That's what these teams want to do. They don't just schedule them because they want to make an easy schedule. They schedule them strategically. And to look at some of these SEC schools and what they have future power for non-conference opponents, 2020 – this is Alabama – 2025, Florida State, Wisconsin. 2026, West Virginia, Florida State. 2027, West Virginia, Ohio State. 2028, Ohio State, Oklahoma State. 2029, Notre Dame, Oklahoma State. 2030, Georgia Tech, Notre Dame. I mean, the list goes on and on. That's just through 2030. I can go through 2035. Arkansas, 2025, Notre Dame. 2026, Utah. 2027, Oklahoma State. 2028, Notre Dame. 2029, Utah. 2030, Texas Tech. Auburn, Baylor, back-to-back years, and then they play Miami back-to-back years in 2029 and 2030. Florida, Miami, and Florida State, that's always going to be a mainstay on their schedule. They added Colorado in 2028 and Arizona State. Georgia, they add Louisville in 2026. That's also in 2027. Ohio State in 2031. Clemson is also in 2029, 2030. Kentucky's a lone team that really doesn't schedule a non-power four school outside of Louisville. That's just their rival. LSU, we talk about Clemson. They get SMU in 2028 and 2029. SMU ended up finishing top two in their league last year. Mississippi State, they play Texas Tech in 2028. Texas Tech is proven to be most invested in their football program. Time and time again, what they've offered these players to come to their school, there's no telling what they're going to be in 2028. And Mississippi State looks like the worst team in the SEC. Missouri, play Kansas, they play Illinois, Colorado, Oklahoma, Michigan, they play Michigan this year, SMU in 2026. Ole Miss, they don't have one until 2032, that being West Virginia Tech. So them and Kentucky are really by themselves with their difficulty scheduling some difficult opponents. South Carolina, Virginia Tech, play Miami and Clemson back-to-back years in 26 and 27, at North Carolina in 28, 29. Tennessee, Georgia Tech, they play them in 26 and 27. Play Washington in 29 and 30. Another scenario there, Nathan, we're kind of like Alabama schedules Florida State and Wisconsin when they're really, really good. Tennessee scheduled Washington when they're really, really good with Kalen DeBoer there. Texas, Ohio State, Michigan, Notre Dame. A&M plays Notre Dame, Arizona State, Louisville. And Vanderbilt plays Virginia Tech, NC State, Stanford, Purdue. So these teams didn't just go out and say, you know what, we're going to be like Indiana and let me schedule – Kennesaw State, Old Dominion, and Indiana State, and walk into my conference schedule. They're scheduling difficult opponents to warm up the season, and some of these even play them as the rivalry game at the end of the year. So Cignetti's comments that we're going to take the SEC philosophy here and schedule what we schedule, well, let me see. Who are you going to schedule now? Are you going to schedule an Alabama? Are you going to schedule a Georgia? No, because you're scared. You know you wouldn't handle it. His comments were way out of line. He had nothing to back up his claim. He just wanted to make the news, kind of like Greg McElroy did a couple weeks ago with his Nick Saban claim. And Cignetti looks like an absolute joke. If you're going to come out and take a shot at the SEC, have a leg to stand on. And making the college football playoff 1 year after playing one ranked team and losing to that one ranked team very bad, get out of here, man. Absolute clown. Put on the nose, put on the wig, and go on the sideline. That's what Kurt Cignetti is doing to himself right now. But one person that had some backup to what he said was SMU's Brett Lashley. At ACC Media Days, he came out and said, the same six SEC schools have won the SEC since 1964. Not a single one is different from 1964. That's top heavy. That's not depth. And then he went on Paul Feinbaum and backed up his claim and said that he brought up historical data and there was stuff to back it up. And unlike Cignetti, he didn't throw shade at the SEC scheduling when he himself didn't schedule a Power Four team on his schedule. So he kind of backed up himself saying there's data to back him up and ended up taking a shot at Cignetti about how Cignetti, we just talked about it, wanted to take a shot at the SEC scheduling, but he himself didn't schedule a non-conference Power Four team.
Yes. I will say this about Rhett Lashley's comments. Let's go take a look at the ACC, and he was constantly finishing in the last – I mean, look, Clemson was basically winning the conference every single year for an entire decade. Florida State was in there some. You had Miami doing good at points. And I can't even think of other ones because you want to talk about real top-heavy. You want to talk about teams that don't have any – I mean, conferences that don't have any depth. You look at the ACC because I can pick out about – 3 to 4 teams in the ACC every year. I mean, okay, they're going to be above average. And then the rest of the ACC, it's like a group of five conference. I mean, I'm sorry. There's just not a lot of great talent in the ACC as there once was. They're flocking to other places. They want to play for bigger teams and bigger schools. And, I mean, outside of Clemson and Miami and Florida State and I guess – you can really say North Carolina now. I think North Carolina is a bigger school you want to go and play for now because it's not like people want to go play for Boston College. It's not like people
there's multiple reasons for Boston College, one of them being their head coach.
I don't know how many people really want to go play for SMU. I'm sorry, even though you made the college football playoff last year to get splattered by Penn State. I don't know how many people want to go and play for SMU, which also didn't really belong in the playoff. I don't know who wants to go play for Virginia. The only people who want to go play for Virginia Tech or to run out to Enter Sandman and go sit on the bench. That's about it. And what is there? What else is there? Syracuse?
There's Stanford in California, oddly enough.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so let me go to Stanford to play in the ACC. We go to a school on the Pacific Coast to go play in the Atlantic Coastal Conference and make sure that I just maximize my time in the air trying to travel to play at another school just to get walloped. If you want to talk
California, you got Brian Harsin as your offensive coordinator.
Oh, yeah, that's wonderful. That's why they have their entire running back room transfer out. But it's a stupid claim to make. It's very stupid for people to keep attacking the SEC and say, oh, you have flaws here and there. And then you go look at their conference, and it's just worse off than the SEC's is. So I don't get why people, these head coaches, feel the need to attack the SEC like they have been doing. It's really a situation where I would have been minding my own business. I would have been worrying about what I need to be worrying about to have a better season than I did last year. I mean, I'd be focused on winning a national championship. I don't know what goals the SMU and Indiana have for that season. Probably just snake into the college football playoff again and not play anyone real strong. But, I mean, all jokes aside, it's something that you should stay in your own lane. It's not comments you should be making. It's just comments to stir up talk about college football, and honestly, I'm tired of it. It's exhausting to continuously address these crappy claims that these coaches continue to make. Because there's the only truth behind it was that the SEC can be top heavy at times, but it also has a lot more depth than the ACC does, and the Big Ten does, and still the most depth of any conference out there. So, yeah, does the SEC lack depth? Yeah, but not like any of these other conferences can talk.
You look at the national championship winners in the last 30 years. If you count Texas and Oklahoma, 8 schools from the SEC have won national championships compared to 7 schools from every other conference. Those 7 were Ohio State, Michigan, Clemson, Florida State, USC, Miami, and Nebraska. So you're telling me that the SEC is top heavy, but if you include Texas and Oklahoma, they have more national championship wins than every other Power Four, Group of Five conference combined. Okay. And I get it. The same 6 SEC schools have won the SEC since 1964. Okay. That just means they're good schools. But you have 8 teams win national championships. That's great. Unfortunately, there are teams in the SEC that just have not been good at football. Vanderbilt till last year and when they were under James Franklin have really not been that great. Mississippi State, outside of the Dak Prescott years, kind of up and down. Kentucky, I mean, they're up and down as well, but they're really down right now. I mean, the list goes on and on. But for somebody that's the SMU head coach to take a shot at the SEC in a realm where he didn't really have to, it was ACC media days, wasn't SEC media days. It just goes to show that the SEC lives rent-free in a lot of head coaches and athletic directors' heads right now because they have all the power in the world.
It just means more, Alex.
Just means more. But Nathan, I want to ask you before we head out of here today, the six SEC schools that have won the SEC championship have been Alabama, Georgia, Auburn, Florida, LSU, and Tennessee. Outside of Texas and Oklahoma, because we know those teams will probably eventually win the conference here sooner rather than later, especially Texas. What team do you think has the best chance that hasn't won it to win the SEC?
Hasn't won it.
Not just this year, the soonest.
Yeah. It's a hard question. I'd say probably Texas A&M. And that just gives a show how much access they have to NIL funds and how many recruits that they can bring in. It's only a matter of time before Mike Elko can put the pieces together to get them to the SEC championship and win it. It's a hard thing to do. And I think there are other teams out there that can do it. But I think that they'll probably be in the best situation too. But I don't know how soon that will be.
Mm. I want to say Ole Miss just because I look at what Lane Kiffin has done there time after time, year after year, bringing in transfer portal classes. I'm just not sure how they're able to sustain that year after year and bringing in basically an entire new roster every year. But Lane Kiffin, his offensive mind, it's unmatched in the SEC, really, except maybe Steve Sarkisian. And you have a guy in Austin Simmons at quarterback who everybody raves about. In the moments he got to play last year, especially when Jackson Dart went down, he looked stellar. Now, is Ole Miss going to win it this year? I don't think so. They lost a lot defensively, a lot of impact players, and there's a lot of other teams around the SEC that have brought back a lot of veteran leadership that Ole Miss doesn't have. But if Lane Kiffin can continue to bring in the talent he brings in, develop it, even if it's just a quarterback or getting some good receivers here and there, which he always has, Ole Miss can be very, very scary in the SEC under Lane Kiffin. I just worry about their non-conference scheduling because, like we talked about earlier, them and Kentucky are the only team that really don't schedule difficult opponents outside of the SEC, and that's always been the harp on Ole Miss under Lane Kiffin is they play these cupcake schedules outside of the conference, and they get into the gauntlet of the conference, and they drop three or four games, and the season's basically up in flames, which is what has been happening the past couple of years. That's a big worry for Ole Miss. But Texas A&M is a pretty good choice too, Nathan. You talked about their access to money. Marcel Reed, the quarterback there, they're going to make the offense easy for him. He looked great at moments last year, but also very bad at moments last year. And they don't have Connor Wiegman behind him this year to help bail him out. Love Jacob Zeno. Love what he did at UAB. But the SEC is a completely different beast than the American Athletic Conference, or now the American Conference. So I do worry if Marcel Reed, the way he plays football, very loosey-goosey, running out there, taking hits left and right, kind of like we expected Jalen Milroe to do, where Jalen Milroe kind of just danced around the pocket and tried to avoid contact. Marcel Reed gets into the contact, so that's a big worry for A&M fans in his career, is taking that one bad big shot and, you know, knocking him out. Hopefully it doesn't happen to him because he's a uber-talented player. Mm-hmm. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.